Good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. It's July 11th. I'm David Taffin here in the studio with Lauren Landis and Alex the intern. Patty is finishing up her extended vacation. She should be back with us next week. I'm not sure when she gets back in, but I think it's sometime during the week this week that she gets back. You can friend us on Facebook, download podcasts of the show at lambdaweekly.com. Big week here in Dallas, especially Friday.
Big one.
Now, I was there for a lot of it. I wasn't there. I didn't chase the Phelps clan all over the city, but I did go to two of their little outings. Started off, Fred Phelps, for anybody who doesn't know who he is, he's the one who protests the military funerals and gay funerals and things like that.
Yeah, within the gay community, he's probably best known for protesting Matthew Shepard's funeral.
That's when he really, I guess, came to national prominence.
Exactly.
But he was here this week to protest Jewish groups. So he started downtown at the Holocaust Museum, possibly a new low. And it was really a funny experience. The way the counter-protesters decided to counter-protest, and they do different things at different in different cities to greet him differently, different places. But the way they decided to greet was with stupid signs. Because the Phelps Klan, they have their...
Their signs are so smart.
Their signs are, yeah. one of my favorite ones was, "Your rabbi is a whore." They had, you know, just real nice things like that. That's what the Phelps Klan had.
So I didn't see that one.
It was countered by ridiculous signs like "God hates orange," "Where's my donut?" this sign intentionally left blank. You know, just ridiculous things. Now, before the Phelps Klan got there, the counter protesters were standing in one place across the street from the Holocaust Museum, and not everybody was up on who the Phelps Klan was, what their signs were, and they're reading these signs and going, "Well, these signs don't even make sense," because they thought they were the Phelps people, mm-hmm. and they thought there were a lot of them. You know, I'm explaining to people, no. These are the counter-protesters. That's a lot more counter-protesters than Phelps people. But the Phelps people brought 17 people.
That's a lot for them.
It is. They usually bring 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm. And again, for those who don't know, the Phelps clan is a family.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Phelps, his wife, and their offspring, pretty yeah. much, right?
Pretty much. Although they claim they have like 100 members, but, you know, it's normally 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
What was disturbing to most people is that there were 17 people at the Holocaust Museum protest, and what was disturbing was that most of them were children.
Yeah.
Now, I was able to get up close. The police were keeping everybody away, but I had a press pass, so I was able to get up close. And looking into those children's eyes, it was vacant. It was really upsetting. Now, we talked to Abigail, who is, I think, one of Fred's daughters.
Yes.
And what I found disturbing there was she was surprisingly sane. She, you know, I expected a lunatic. And what she was saying was hate, and what she was saying was nonsense and garbage. But she was surprisingly sane in the way she was presenting.
Yeah, she had a very calm demeanor.
Calm and rational, though, too. I mean, you can be calm and be irrational, but calm and rational. She wasn't going to convince anybody. I mean, she was just saying disgusting things. Anyway, so they're out there, they're protesting, they're singing anti-Holocaust songs.
Who knew such songs even existed?
Well, they made them up, but every time they
started
singing...
So they have musical
singing,
talent also.
Every time they started singing, the counter-protesters drowned them out, or a DART train came by to drown them out. So they didn't get through more than 1 or 2 lines of their anti-Holocaust songs. And the only reason I heard them was, again, I was right there. Funniest part of the day for me was that I was calming down some of the police officers. Now, the police were there to keep people separate and to keep the calm. The police were so incensed. Now, we're used to it. We've heard this guy and lived with this guy for so long that what we do is we take him as a joke. You can either be extremely insulted by him or take him as a joke. And that was the way that we decided. That's why at the Resource Center, the fundraiser was called "When Hell Freezes Over." You know, he's a joke. Let's raise money. And that was the theme for the day. So inside the Holocaust Museum, the people at the museum said, and if you haven't been to the Holocaust Museum, go. It's really a very nicely done, small museum. Doesn't take that long to go through.
It's in the same building as the JFK Museum.
No. It's next to it.
It's around a corner.
Yeah. The thing about this museum is the way they tell the story, because they have a small space right now, and they're planning on building a larger one here in Dallas, but because it's a small space, they tell the story of the Holocaust over just one day. They have Dallas Times Herald headlines and front pages and the Star-Telegram front page, and all the artifacts are from people who were in the Holocaust who ended up moving to Dallas. So it's a very personal story. These are our friends and neighbors and people who live here in Dallas telling their story. So the museum is well done, and they ended up with record attendance. I was inside the museum for a while talking to the director and the development director and several other people there. And they were saying, I really wish the people who were the counter-protest, I wish they'd come inside, because this really is about our day of tolerance here. So I went outside, I wandered through the crowds, and I said, please, everybody has to come inside. After the Phelps Klan is gone, please come inside, because we want the story to be record attendance today at the Holocaust Museum, not lots of protesters countering these people, but lots of people came to do something positive. Well, the Klan left finally. They went off to their next stop. And, the people from the museum, I wonder if they're coming. And then we just kind of looked, and the line went from the desk and down the hall and down the stairs and around the corner. And 500 people went through the museum that day, and record attendance, absolutely record, which was nice.
That's very nice.
Because that was the story. That's the story. They asked all of the local Holocaust survivors, who were elderly, they're in their 80s at least, to stay home for the day. Two of them came. One of them, there's an auditorium, and in the auditorium they show several films, and he was answering questions. He was in his glory. He was having a ball. And his attitude toward the protesters, I've seen a lot worse in my day than some stupid signs.
Yeah,
and that's the attitude that we were having too. They're just stupid signs. These are stupid people. When I was talking to the police and calming them down, I said, "You have to understand, these people are only there. It's their business. The hate and all that's irrelevant. Their business is to find the most disgusting thing that they can do, and provoke people." And when they've provoked you enough, then they'll turn around and sue you.
Yeah.
And we can't have that. We cannot allow these people to make money off of us. We're making money off of them.
And unfortunately, when they sue, a lot of times they win.
Well, they do. You know why they win? Like, they'll sue a police department. It's not like it goes to trial. And they sue the police department for not providing adequate protection. It's not that it goes to trial. It's that the insurance company that covers them just settles.
Well, there's also this story that came out, a couple months ago? This man who lost his son, who died while over in battle in, I think, Afghanistan, the Phelps Klan protested his funeral. Mm-hmm. And, the man sued, and he lost because I guess it was on grounds of he had the right to protest wherever he wanted to.
He won in the lower court. It got overturned on appeal, and all he won, all they won, though, really, was court costs, which came to about $15,000.
That's a lot of money.
But it's a lot of money, and, hell no, we're not paying that.
Exactly.
But in order to appeal it even higher, it has to be paid.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if they've decided, yes, we'll pay it.
Well, I think
Bill O'Reilly
said that he would pay for it.
He was so outraged. He said he would pay for it. Yeah, well, he was outraged that the father of somebody who lost his son fighting for this country was ordered to pay that money. And he said, no, he's not going to pay that. I will.
Right.
Good for him.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if they were going to pay it and appeal again or just let it drop and not pay it.
I think that's the way I understood it. Just pay it and just leave it alone.
Mm. Yeah. They moved on to different locations. They were at the Jewish Community Center, and the big plan there was kids who were in the summer camp program there, make sure they don't see the Phelps people, and they were there for 15 minutes, they left. They went up to a Jewish high school in North Dallas, which apparently, I mean, they're closed for the summer, I would think, but they apparently have some summer program, and they canceled all classes or whatever they have for the day. And then they protested an office up in North Dallas that they were on the sidewalk. There's a big parking lot between the sidewalk and the building, and this company's up on the sixth floor, so, you know, who cared? Then they came to the community center, and the crowd was even bigger than it was at the Holocaust Museum.
Good, good.
First of all, what we did was what the Resource Center did was they chalked the sidewalk across the street in rainbow stripes. And arranged with the police, that's where they'll protest. And the police said, that's fine with us. They were so over it by then because they had been chasing these people. They had an exhausting day.
I bet.
They were actually very impressed with the crowds because they said, you know, we need you to stay, you know, stay on the sidewalk, stay in the Resource Center parking lot. And everybody said, fine. You know, it wasn't an angry crowd. You know, they're used to, when they're doing crowd control, for it to be a mob or an angry crowd. The police were more angry than the protesters, I think, because they had never really, these particular officers, seen this kind of disgusting hate before.
Yeah.
And we have. We have. So, you know, we're making fun of it. Well, at the Resource Center, they were protesting Congregation Beth El Bana, which is the gay and lesbian synagogue. And, you know, people from the synagogue came and everybody's cheering and, you know, it was a lot of fun. But then the Phelps people came. And before they got there, when Hell Freezes Over was about was the center had an ice machine for their hot meals program for people with HIV. The ice machine went out. And so a new one is $3,100. They were raising money for that. Before the Phelps people got there, they had already raised $5,000. They had gotten donations from across the country because this had gotten good publicity. In the parking lot, for every minute that those bastards were standing across the street,
I was wondering what choice word you were going to use.
People were donating money. They collected $2,700. $2,700 in the parking lot in a 30-minute period. So they collected about $7,700. I don't have the final tally. I'm sure more money's pouring in over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And they have their ice machine, the Westboro Baptist Church Memorial Ice Machine.
So thank you, Fred.
So exactly. And as far as the Resource Center is concerned, come back anytime at all. So that's the story of the... of Fred Phelps this week, and he was also supposed to be around, and I'm saying the Klan, because he was not here. The Klan was supposed to be around protesting a bunch of different groups today, mm-hmm. out in Arlington and in North Dallas and the Cathedral of Guadalupe downtown, and in Arlington it was a Baptist church, and in North Dallas it was Chabad, which is a conservative, Orthodox group, you know, for whatever. Yeah, and what were they protesting? Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah, we never.
Is there any sense to anything that they protest?
No.
Well, you know, it was good. Something good came out of something really bad.
Well, the Holocaust Museum got record attendance. They got new memberships. They got lots of donations. The Resource Center got its ice machine, as well as the brakes went out on the food pantry's van. And so that's getting fixed. So that's what happened.
Good.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
What other news going on this week?
Well, there is a big one, and why don't we start this, but we'll continue it after the break.
Okay.
DOMA was declared unconstitutional, or portions of it.
As we have long suspected that it would be eventually declared unconstitutional.
I mean, we knew unconstitutional. It's patently unfair.
Yeah, and what DOMA is the Defense of Marriage Act, signed by Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Which basically says states have the right to not recognize other states who grant same-sex marriage.
Right.
And I think this case came out of Massachusetts, right?
Yes. It was Martha Coakley who ran for Senate and lost big. Mm-hmm. She's the one who brought the case. She's the Attorney General of the state, and she's the one who brought the case. You know, it's funny, we've been waiting for the Prop 8 case decision to come down, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, here comes DOMA is declared unconstitutional. It was like completely off the radar screen.
Well, I remember when the case was filed, but it just hasn't much been.
Did you hear anything about the arguments being?
No, you have not.
Nothing. Nothing. And what this was, you know, the right wing likes to claim states' rights. Well, this judge, who, by the way, was appointed by Richard Nixon, this judge, basically his attitude was, the right wing wants to argue states' rights. Okay, we'll argue states' rights.
But he maybe we should do this after the break, but specifically what they are arguing, the state of Massachusetts, you might be thinking, well, what are they arguing? They already grant same-sex marriage in Massachusetts. It's not that. It's specifically that even when, you know, the few states that do offer same-sex marriage, you still can't get federal benefits. You know, you only get everything that that state has to offer. Mm-hmm. So they are arguing that that state should be allowed to offer those federal benefits.
That if you're married in the state of Massachusetts, the federal government does not have the right to treat some of the marriages that we perform differently than other marriages that we
absolutely
perform.
And which is states' rights.
And it's the 10th Amendment, actually. The 10th Amendment reserves all powers not delegated to Congress to the states or the people. Now, the state in this case has decided that they would issue marriage licenses mm-hmm. to both opposite-sex and same-sex couples. And the state was arguing, since this is a state case, there are two cases going through. One of them has to do more with what you were talking about, that you don't get Social Security, that you don't get Medicare benefits for a partner. You don't. There are a number of things that you don't get.
Right.
You can't file joint taxes, mm-mm. which means that since you do file joint taxes within the state, if you were living in Massachusetts, you wouldn't file two tax returns, you and Danny. You would file basically four. You have you would file separately, each one of you, a federal tax. Then you have to refigure your tax as if you were a couple, because the bottom line on your federal tax is what's the first line on the state tax. So you'd have to refigure that. Then you file your state tax instead of just two. So it's not just the difference between the amount that you pay, it's paying your tax preparer, if you're paying one, to figure your taxes four times, not twice.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It'll cost the gay couple twice as much. So they're arguing, though, really. Now, those kinds of things are coming down in a different case. This one was more about the state's costs. Things like I read one thing, and I don't have it here in front of me, but if a couple is being buried in a federal cemetery, like if one is a military officer, or a military, not alumni, what are they called? Somebody who was in the military.
Veteran
thank you, alumni.
Thank you, Alex.
Yeah. If Dave Gaynor's listening, he's thinking,
he's cringing.
An idiot. Right. Things like, if you were a veteran, Laron, and you and Danny were going to be buried together, well, the state is the one that seems to control who gets buried there, but then the state would be charged back by the federal government because they're not recognizing the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So they're charging that it's costing the state money.
Gotcha.
It's not just costing the individuals for the federal government. It's costing the state. They're arguing that by not, if you and Danny needed Medicaid, let's say, that because he can't get the Medicaid, it's costing the state the extra money because they do have to provide that because they're recognizing your marriage. But the federal government, by not doing that, they're not getting the same reimbursements that they would get. Why don't we take a break? You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. We'll be back. We're going to talk more about this DOMA ruling.
If it's time to get rid of your old gas guzzler, the KNON Vehicle Donation Program can help. There's still a market for those old vehicles, and if you donate it, you're helping support quality programming here on KNON. Just call 877-KNON-AUTO or go online at knon.org. We'll take care of everything from free pickup to sending you your tax paperwork. 877-KNON-AUTO.
It's the hottest polka party of the summer, Sunday, August 8th, when KNON presents the KNON Ogtoberfest at the Sons of Herman Hall in Dallas. Come out and join Polka Jennifer and David of North Texas Polka Radio for a summer polka celebration KNON benefit. You've been asking for it, and so now we are doing it. Be there for great polka music from the Harvesters and the Jody Mikula Orchestra. There'll be an accordion jam session in the bowling alley downstairs. Tasty food will be provided by the Bavarian Grill and Kolache Station. Advanced tickets are available now at KNON.org, the Kolache Station, and Bavarian Grill in Plano. Bring the whole family for the joy of polka on a Sunday afternoon at the historic Sons of Herman Hall, a true Texas dance hall in Dallas. It's fine music, food, and fun with the Harvesters, Jody Mikula Orchestra, an accordion jam, Kolache Station, the Bavarian Grill, and North Texas Polka Radio at the KNON Oktoberfest, Sunday, August 8th. Doors open at 1 p.m. and music starts at 2. The Sons of Herman Hall is located at 3414 Elm Street in Dallas. The number at the Sons is 214-747-4422. For more information, KNON.org or 214-828-9500, extension 227.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Alex the Intern and Lauren Landis. Next week, Patty will be back with us. We're talking about this DOMA ruling that was overturned. Now, our guest next week is Ken Upton, who is the local staff attorney for Lambda Legal. Mm-hmm. And he'll give us more of the legal ins and outs of this. They'll have had another week to really look at this, because this just happened on Thursday, and people were like, whoa.
Just happened on Thursday, and I think this is really interesting, because now it puts the Obama administration in a second pickle. You know, first they're having to defend Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which is being challenged in court, mm-hmm. even though he's trying to, or the administration is trying to overturn that. Okay, now he has said publicly that he wants to get rid of DOMA. Well, I think he's obligated to defend it, even though now it's been ruled unconstitutional.
In her confirmation hearings, Elena Kagan explains some of that, though, very clearly. It's the job of the Solicitor General, which is the position that she currently holds, to defend the laws as Congress passes them. Now, she could, or the administration could, decide not to defend that law, but very strictly, it is their job to defend it. And, you know, and she actually used that as a, well, I think you're just a liberal, blah, 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 because you did this and that. And she said, no, when I was at Harvard, I was interpreting the rules as written at Harvard. If you're looking for a strict constructionist, that's what I am. As Solicitor General, I defended the laws as Congress wrote them, not because I believed in them or not believed in them, but because that's my job to do it.
Right.
So she really is a very, you know, whether or not she believes in it, that's her job to do.
Mm-hmm.
With this one, though, they could actually decide not to defend it. But they won't. They won't. They will defend this one, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure they will.
And we'll see. We'll see what kind of a defense also. Anyway, the judge ruled based on the 10th Amendment. The 10th Amendment is that thing that the right wing loves to use. States' rights, right? Well, what about if you're a state that happens to believe in same-sex marriage? That's that state's right. Oh, well, no, it doesn't apply then. It's just like,
right.
It's just like all of these right-wingers who were like, no, it shouldn't be decided by the courts. It should be decided by the legislature. So the California legislature passes same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
And no, it needs to be decided by the courts.
Right, right.
So the courts decided, no, then...
Then we
need to take it for a vote.
But they go in circles. Because, and we'll get to Hawaii in a minute, but here recently, their legislature passed something, and now she's saying, oh, no, it needs to be decided by the people.
Right.
So they go in circles.
Of course. judge, his name is Joseph El Toro, he concluded that DOMA was unconstitutional because it, quote, plainly intrudes on a core area of state sovereignty, the ability to define the marital status of its citizens. And in her complaint, Martha Coakley suggested that, and she used as a defense the laws that were overturned by Loving versus Virginia, where up to 41 states at some point did not allow interracial marriage. And what he said was, plaintiffs contend that due to the operation of Section 3 of the Defense of Marriage Act, they've been denied certain federal marriage-based benefits that are available to similarly situated heterosexual couples, in violation of the equal protection principles embodied in the Due Process Clause of the Fifth Amendment, the court agrees. As many as, and here's the part with the 41 states, as many as 41 states and territories of the U.S. banned, nullified, or criminalized marriages across the color line for some period of their history, often using racial classifications that are no longer recognized. Throughout this entire period, however, the federal government consistently relied on state determinations with regard to marriage when they were relevant to federal law.
Interesting.
So, if you and Danny had been married in Massachusetts, your interracial marriage would have been legal, or in Iowa, which was, I think, one of the first states to allow it, your marriage would have been legal.
And the federal government wouldn't have butted in.
Federal government was not asking a question when it came to anything. You know, there were fewer federal, well, not really. I mean, back in the 60s even. You know, if it came to Medicare, if it came to anything else, if you were married, you were married. So they're using something very odd to defend, but they're saying the federal government has a history of only recognizing or of recognizing what the state recognized,
right,
and that this is the first time. And they use several other examples, too. This was the oddest one. But they use several examples of how the federal government always recognized whatever the state recognized. Some of the others were age. If in one state you can get married at 16 and another state not till 18, if you were married at 16, it's recognized. If you can't get married till 18, that it's recognized.
Right, right.
So it's whatever your state recognizes.
That's you learn something new every day.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so a good argument.
And it was a good argument, but this is the first time in history that the federal government has passed a rule to overturn that, to overrule that. So he's saying unconstitutional. You know, we want original intent also, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was the original intent? Well, the federal government never regulated marriage.
No.
Except we want them to now because we don't like what that state's doing. So, you know, states' rights, except if you live in Massachusetts.
All right.
Or Iowa. Or Connecticut, Vermont, or who am I missing?
As far as actual Iowa.
No, I said Hampshire. New Hampshire. Iowa, Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, District of Columbia. And five states recognize
civil unions
that are meant to be equivalent to marriage, just a different name.
New Jersey, California, state of Washington.
Mm-hmm. You had the other one. You almost said it.
Oregon,
and Nevada.
Nevada?
Yeah. Glad they passed it last year. You didn't remember that?
I don't remember talking about that.
It was lobbied by the gambling industry. And the reason they passed it in a Republican legislature, it's a very Republican state, but the reason they passed it was they were afraid of a boycott. They didn't want to do anything that would hurt their tourism. And they figured same-sex marriages, or basically, which is basically what it is, but civil unions will help our tourist industry. Other than gambling, what is the industry there? You know, there are big shows.
Quickie marriages. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what Nevada is.
Well, that one just went over my head.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. Why don't we go to the entertainment report?
All right, mentioning all this gay marriage news, here's one that kind of went sour, and I don't know, is this going to be our first celebrity messy gay marriage breakup, divorce? Last week, Melissa Etheridge took steps to make her breakup with actress Tammy Lynn Michaels official when she filed for a dissolution of a domestic partnership. Again, they actually did not get married. They missed that deadline, so they got a domestic partnership. Now, this week, Tammy Lynn is fighting back and has filed her own paperwork asking for full custody of their 3-year-old twins. Tammy Lynn also claims that Melissa has left her penny list with $4 to be exact, and that Melissa hasn't given her or the kids a dime since they broke up. She says that she gave up her acting career in 2001 to raise the children. This is going to get messy. Oh,
okay, A, she didn't have much of an acting career, so stop. and, you know, I don't give a lot of these people much slack.
Right, you know, you don't.
But, and B, really, she's penniless?
That's what I thought. I was like, $4, come on now. Where did you get that? But it is interesting because Melissa Etheridge, in her filing, she did ask for no spousal support. None. And I guess you can get that in California. So I guess this is her way of shooting back. Well, if I don't get spousal support, you don't get joint custody.
Well, it doesn't have to be, you know, you would not have spousal support here in Texas.
No, that's what, yeah, you don't get that in Texas.
But there certainly would be child support.
Yeah.
I hope she's held to child support.
Now, and for those who may not know or forgotten, Melissa has two other kids from her previous partner.
You know, I don't care who she's having sex with.
So now she's got all these kids. I don't know.
She can afford her 10 kids more than you can afford your one.
Absolutely.
I'm not worried about it.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right about that.
She wants to have all these kids.
Yeah.
She can pay for them.
She can pay for them.
Just like any heterosexual couple that has too many kids. and I'm not saying she has too many kids. I'm really not. She decided to have these kids. And you know what? When a gay couple or a lesbian couple decides to have children, you think about it, you work at it, and it costs.
It costs a lot.
And you know that.
Yes.
You know that very well.
Firsthand.
It costs a lot of money, and you know what? It doesn't end at birth.
All right.
You got to raise the kids, and...
I just wonder, though, with these couples. I hate to see this. You know, I'm laughing about it, but I do hate to hear about breakups.
I hate to see
breakups.
It, too, because I want us to set an example.
And that's exactly it. I want us to set an example. But in reality, couples are couples, gay or straight, and we break up sometimes. It's that simple. But
we take care of our kids.
We take care of our kids. But I wonder why things went so bad so quick to where, you know, it comes to this. And when they both are claiming they had an amicable split. So, I don't know. There's more to it. I'm sure this would be in the headlines.
Obviously, it wasn't amicable.
Oh, obviously it wasn't.
You know, and that's what went through the press, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. Not my business. I don't care whether they argued or not. But I do care, just like with the Fred Phelps protest, one of the things one of the police officers wanted to do, and I didn't say this before, but one of the things he wanted to do, these kids that were spouting this hate, he wanted to call Child Protective Services.
I so wish he would have.
So does everybody who I've said that to. What would we have done with these kids? I mean, you couldn't put them in a home anywhere. You just couldn't. These would be unmanageable. What does that have to do with what we were just talking about? I don't know.
Just kids.
But we do take care of our kids.
We do take care of our kids.
And I don't want to hear that she's arguing no child support. I just don't even want to hear that.
Yeah.
And if she does argue that, I want the judge to sock her with huge child support payments.
I'm sure Patty, when she comes back, she'll give us more insight.
Defend her.
She's a Melissa Etheridge-holic. It's a battle of the gay actors in the Emmys this year. Actor Neil Patrick Harris has picked up two Emmy nominations. When the nominees were announced this week for the upcoming 68th Emmys. This is Neil's fourth time to be nominated for his role as a straight womanizing character. I love that. On the CBS show, How I Met Your Mother. Now, if he wins, it'll be the first time that he won, but he'll be bested out by two other openly gay actors in the same category nominated this year. Chris Colfer, who plays on Glee, and Jesse Tyler Ferguson on Modern Family. I think it's tough. I like them both.
And Eric Stone Street, who's straight but plays the best gay character ever on TV, Jesse Tyler Ferguson's partner.
Is he nominated too?
He's nominated also.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, that's going to be tough.
I want him to win.
Yeah. Yeah.
He is so good in that show.
He is
so good.
I'd be happy if any of them won, but I think my vote goes to Neil Patrick Harris.
And I think he's going to win.
I think he is. He deserves it.
And you know why? What people think, oh, well, he's been doing this so long, he's never been honored with it, and how long will that show go on? Modern Family, it'll be on next year, and it'll be
it
on
will.
For years.
It will.
But, I mean, Eric Stone Street is so good.
He is good. He is good.
He is the best gay character. I don't care that he's not...
Oh, no.
You know, he's an actor.
He's a good actor.
He's an actor.
He's a good actor.
But he plays that role... And this is what's important. It doesn't matter whether the actor is gay or not. as much as, just like you say, you love that Neil Patrick Harris plays this womanizing.
I do. I love that.
But Eric Stone Street plays the most wonderful gay character.
But that's been proven that it can be done. A straight guy playing a good gay guy, a convincingly gay guy. But, you know, especially with this Newsweek article controversy that came out a month or so ago.
And that might win it for him.
And I think this would be a real good payback. Like, see, we can do it too, and we have been doing it. So, yeah, I hope he wins. NBC's Today Show has decided to open up its annual wedding contest to gay and lesbian couples after GLAAD began protesting the exclusion about a week earlier. Now, executives say that they didn't intend to exclude anyone, noting that gay marriage is illegal in the state of New York where the show is broadcast. So they had to remind them, hey, look, gay couples can still go get married in Canada. Mm-hmm. They can still get married in Connecticut and Massachusetts. All of these are neighboring or nearby places where they can get married.
And the rules were that to save money for NBC, it was that the marriage had to take place in New York.
They had the marriage, and also that New York does recognize these marriages also. The state of New York does
recognize.
They do recognize them.
But you just can't do it there.
You just can't do it there. So they did change their rules. They also extended the deadline to Monday, July 2nd, which is what, tomorrow?
July 12th.
July 12th, I'm sorry, the 12th. So if you're up that way, you want to be on TV, go and give it a shot.
You know, they're saying they're doing that it had to be in New York because they were saving money. What difference does it make if you're flying somebody in who wins from...
Exactly.
You know, from Chicago or from Dallas or whatever, and you're flying them into New York or you're flying them into Connecticut.
Right.
You know, it's not that far.
Yeah, they can afford it.
Not just they can afford it.
Yeah.
The expense is flying them up there. The expense isn't whether or not it's going to take place in New York City or a $20 train ride to Connecticut.
Right. That's true. And last, in some casting news, Leonardo DiCaprio has signed on to play the lead role in the upcoming Clint Eastwood biopic of FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover. And Leonardo says he wants to stick his teeth into the role. Now, the screenplay, which I was glad to hear about this, the screenplay was written by Dustin Lance Black. He wrote Milk, which won an Oscar. Now, while Hoover vehemently denied the rumors that he was gay, evidence gathered after his 1972 death indicates otherwise, including the fact that many of his closest friends were closeted men. Also, it was rumored that he was a cross-dresser. Mm-hmm. He denied that also. And Leonardo DiCaprio says so far the script doesn't call for him dressing up or anything. So it's going to be interesting. But I think that's a really interesting matchup, Clint Eastwood and Dustin Lance Black. Mm-hmm. But hopefully it's going to come out really well.
Yeah. You know, I have one other one. There's a new film out called The Kids Are All Right.
Yes, I can't wait to see that. No,
okay.
It just came out Friday.
Julianne Moore and Annette Bening play a lesbian couple mm-hmm. who had a child through artificial insemination. Two kids, and mm-hmm. the kids decide to look for who the sperm donor was. Sperm donor is played by Mark Ruffalo, and he's coming because there's been a lot of anti about the film. So Mark Ruffalo slammed gay marriage opponents as bigoted, and he also said that gay families are no different than heterosexual families.
Good.
So, the film seems to be doing well. I'm not sure, was it number one for the weekend?
I don't think it was number one. It came out in limited release. I don't even know if it's in Dallas yet. I'm going to try and see it this week.
Oh, so you don't even know if it opened in Dallas yet?
I don't know if it opened in Dallas. It came out limited release.
Okay. Well, you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. We will be back with a little more. I'm queuing up the card.
But we're going to come back, and we're going to have a big powwow about Hawaii.
And we'll be back with more right after this.
Check out KNON's brand new website at www.knon.org. You can listen to KNON from anywhere in the world with our live internet broadcast stream. See the program schedule and info on all the DJs and formats. Find out about special events, upcoming benefits, and get advanced tickets online. Go to knon.org and support great community radio anytime by making a pledge of support to the voice of the people. The all-new knon.org.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
It's time for
darn heterosexuals. In this economy, it's hard to get a job. So heterosexual Mary Merton of Kingston, New York, wrote to her employers, quote, "I would ask that you consider keeping me employed. I truly enjoy my job and want to continue to work for both of you to make up for my imperfections. Those imperfections include identity theft and embezzling $800,000 for the company when she was their bookkeeper."
Nice. Real heterosexual science. In February, Virginia State Legislator Bob Marshall spoke in opposition to state funding for Planned Parenthood. He said the organization is partly responsible for the number of disabled children in America. According to the Old Testament, he explained, being forced to bear a disabled child is punishment for the mother's having earlier aborted her firstborn.
And sacred heterosexual marriage, a Baltimore judge ruled that a woman could not change her mind about testifying against her boyfriend in a domestic violence case because they weren't married. So the woman requested that the judge marry them. He halted the trial long enough to issue the license and perform the ceremony. Then he granted her marital privilege to not testify against her husband and dismissed the case for lack of evidence. And that's this week's
Those Darn Heterosexuals.
You should be disbarred for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hawaii, which I like to call the birthplace of this same-sex marriage fight.
And it was, because there was a Hawaii case that went through in the mid-90s, and it was about to legalize same-sex marriage.
For the first time.
Marriage,
mm-hmm.
actually. Back in like 1997,
I think
98,
six, something like that.
Okay,
yeah,
okay. And then they changed their constitution before
right.
the court ruling could be enforced.
Right, so. Right, exactly. Well, now, 15 plus years later, the civil unions have worked their way through both the Hawaii Senate and Congress, their legislature,
the House and Senate.
And it went to their governor's desk, and she waited to the very last day to announce. Now, she had three choices. She could have vetoed it, she could have signed it, or she couldn't have signed it at all and just let it become law without her signature. She waited to the last day to act on it, and she vetoed it. Of course, it was, gasp and sadness from people on our side, and on the other side, there was joy and glee like you would not believe. And it was sad to see. It really was. But, David, you were saying a lot of people thought she was going to do it because she would sign it or let it become law some way because she was Jewish.
A lot of people thought she was going to let it happen because she was Jewish. There is one big synagogue in Hawaii. It's on Oahu. It's called Temple Emmanuel. The rabbi from there came from Texas, Peter Shachtman. He was in Houston at the big synagogue there that has a huge outreach to the gay and lesbian community. Their website has a big, welcome to the gay and lesbian community that they perform same-sex marriages there because in Judaism, we have same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
In Reform Judaism, mm-hmm. Conservative Judaism even does, Reconstructionist Judaism does, Orthodox not so much. So I did a little bit of research to see if she was a member of Temple Emmanuel, and she's not. She's a member of Chabad, which is an Orthodox group.
Orthodox.
And so, I didn't see that in any reports anywhere. I mean, I had to do some digging to find that. And so it didn't surprise me that she, on religious grounds.
I mean, I don't know. She, if you saw her press conference, she announced this veto in the press conference. And she, she appeared to be very sympathetic about it. She gave a lot of thought. She said this. She's never put so much thought into consideration into any other bill than this.
And I know before the show you said, oh, pfft.
Yeah.
And I said, I was reading what Peter Shachtman, the rabbi from Temple Emmanuel, wrote, and he spent quite a bit of time lobbying her to sign it. So apparently, and he felt she really did listen. I mean, he was giving her credit for that. So, I'm listening to him and to what he said.
I guess I'm not saying that she didn't listen. I'm sure she did. But I think she already had her mind made up. And I say that because if you listen to the entire press conference, the more she spoke, the angrier you would have gotten.
And I'm saying that there was definitely a religious bias there.
Religious bias.
She did not belong to Temple Emmanuel like most Jews in Hawaii. She belonged to Chabad like a few dozen Jews in Hawaii.
You know, she said about 10 times in her press conference that this was not based on her personal opinion, but she said this decision should not be made by one person, but all the people of Hawaii. Well, you just made that decision. You're one person. Mm-hmm. And
when a legislature does make a law, it is being made by the people.
It is made by the people.
People elect the legislators.
Exactly.
The legislators make laws in the name of the people.
Exactly.
If you don't like what they're legislating, elect different people.
Exactly.
That whole thing, like in elementary school.
And like, yeah. At least by eighth grade.
Yeah. That it's.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You're absolutely right, Alex. So, and then she went on further to compare that incestuous marriages aren't legally recognized, you know, so that why should I? So the more she spoke, I'm like, this is hogwash, your so-called empathy.
Well, that shows where her bias was.
Yes.
Because nobody who voted in, you know, nobody in the Massachusetts legislature who voted to legalize same-sex marriage, nobody in the Hawaii legislature who voted to legalize civil unions was equating a same-sex marriage to incest.
No.
There are reasons for outlawing incest. Fred Phelps is a good example.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
There's a reason.
Why. Oh, boy.
If you have too much inbreeding, not too much, if you have inbreeding,
period,
you are going to have mentally deficient children.
Yes.
You are breeding in the worst traits that either of you have.
You got to mix it up.
All of the recessive traits. There is a reason, for that, and it's a biological reason.
And, you know, further proof that she either just doesn't really understand or she didn't want to understand, despite all of her so-called listening to both sides. She said that civil unions is basically marriage by another name. No, it's not. No, it's not. Ask the people of New Jersey. Now, its intent is to be the same thing, separate but equal,
right.
But we know that it's not.
Civil union law in Hawaii did read, just like all the others do,
just
that you have all of the same rights. Now, with this DOMA decision, this DOMA decision really isn't saying that civil unions are equivalent. It's saying that outlawing same-sex marriage is illegal.
Yeah, it's illegal.
It's illegal for a state that wants to have it,
right.
For the federal government not to recognize it. So
I think the real reason why she wants this to go to a public vote is because she knows we'll lose. We've lost all of them. Every same-sex marriage referendum that's been put up,
but
with the exception of the one time
in Phoenix,
in Arizona.
Arizona.
The first time it failed. The second time they won.
Well, but and then in Washington State also it went up for a vote when
that's
Maine,
right.
When Maine passed to repeal marriage in Maine. Washington State voted, and they retained their civil unions.
They retained their civil unions, yes.
So, you know, it's...
But the chances of us losing are really, really good. Great, yeah.
Although they did vote for the constitutional amendment. They were the first.
They were the first.
But they are a very democratic state.
Mm-hmm.
Civil union has, and same-sex marriage is 15 years further along than it was when they passed their constitutional amendment. DOMA has just been declared unconstitutional. Don't Ask, Don't Tell is going away. ENDA should pass one of these days. You know, all these things are happening. It's a different time.
It's a different time. So. And for those who, if you haven't seen this press conference, it's online. I encourage you to watch it. And I really encourage you to see the reaction to this, which was just really sad. I mean, it got my blood boiling. I'm not moved too much with all this throughout the years. But to see these people who were applauding and hugging and celebrating and glee.
But those are her supporters. She is a Republican governor in a very Democratic state. She's only the second or third statewide Republican that's ever been elected in that state. There was a senator back in the 60s, and there might have been one other one. But it is a Democratic state. And but she has her supporters. Now, the two things, the two reasons that we thought she might have signed it, first of all, because she's Jewish, but, you know, again, Orthodox, not not Reform. But the other thing is because she, her term of office, she's finishing up her second term. She's not up for re-election.
What
she's
does she
not,
have to lose?
And she's not going anywhere nationally because where's she going to go? I mean, she might get, next time there's a Republican president, she might get a federal appointment. But where's she going? She's not getting elected to the Senate, even if she were to run. She's, you know, she's a Republican in a very Democratic state. She's not going anywhere. So that was one of the hopes, though, that she would sign it just because she would, politically, it didn't matter because she's not going anywhere.
Right. And unfortunately, they didn't have enough votes to override her veto.
Well, they already said in the legislature, and this is probably a Hawaii thing, that they were not going to reconvene and try to override any of her vetoes. The legislature is out for the session, but I guess they can come back and override. They said they were not going to try to override any of her vetoes. They didn't say that about this. They said that a couple of weeks ago. About, you know, and I guess what that is, you know, we're so used to what's going on in Washington and, you know, no, we can't work together. And you're saying yes, okay, so it's no, as opposed to what's the issue and let's discuss it. In a lot of states, there is still more respect for that kind of, you know, for that kind of working together. And if the governor vetoes, we're just not going to try to override it. They might try to pass it again next session.
Yeah, and hopefully they will.
Especially if there's a Democratic governor.
Yeah, or just another governor, period. Yeah.
So, well, if it's a Republican governor, they will probably be more conservative than she is. Because other than this, she has a very liberal record. It's a very liberal state. Very liberal state.
I know, listening to her talk, I don't know how you can get more conservative.
I know.
Other than Ed Fred Phelps.
Well, here's how you can get more conservative. Remember Anita Bryant?
Oh, yeah.
Before your time, Alex. Anita Bryant was the original anti-gay crusader.
Down in Florida.
Mid-70s, down in Florida. Miami had just passed the very first gay rights ordinance for a city, and Anita Bryant, who was a runner-up for Miss America, and she was the orange juice queen. Come to the Florida sunshine tree. I can't believe I remember that stupid song from 35 years ago that idiot sang. But she's making one new appearance. She has been out of the spotlight. Guess who she's appearing with? It's going to be in Oklahoma, and she is appearing with Sally Kern's husband.
Oh, that's fitting.
Of course it
that's
is.
That's very fitting.
Of course it is.
Sally Kern is out there, too.
She's a lunatic.
Lunatic.
And, yeah. Yeah. So she's going to be at a, I guess it was on Friday, Friday night this week. She was at Reclaiming America for Christ. Sally Kern is up for re-election. She's running against Brittany Novotny, who's transgender. Great race. Sally is the one who said that gay people are a bigger threat to this country than
terrorists. Yeah.
Yes.
So we see that Anita hasn't changed her ways.
Right, not at all. Here's a story that I just love. A former Catholic priest in Connecticut turned himself into the police on Tuesday after having been accused of embezzling $1.3 million from a church in Waterbury, Connecticut, and he's been embezzling since 2003. His name is Kevin Gray. He went to the police after learning that there was a warrant out for his arrest. Gray is alleged to have spent the money on hotels, restaurants, clothing, male escorts, and other personal expenses. Here's what I love about this story. When priests abuse children, what does the church do?
They don't report it to the police.
And using what excuse?
Separation
of church and state,
right.
And we'll take care of our own, and we'll monitor, and we'll do this, and blah, 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 right? Okay. So you abuse children and you hide the priest. But a priest who steals money, they went right to the police when they found out.
So we know where their priorities are.
We know where the priorities are. First of all, we know that money is more important than people, than kids. And we know that that it's not true that they won't go to the police. So they have no excuse the next time they find out that a priest has abused a child, that they need to go to the police, and the police need to arrest them.
Yes. Yes.
It's that simple. They have just proven in this case that it is not true that
they can't go to the police.
They don't go to the police when there's criminal activity that's gone on. End of story on that one. There's a Don't Ask, Don't Tell case that's coming up. A federal judge hearing the case next week to challenge the military's ban on gays and lesbian service members. The federal judge decided Wednesday that the government must submit evidence justifying why it has enforced the law. In a pretrial ruling, U.S. District Judge Virginia Phillips said the Obama administration's lawyers must show that Congress came to a reasonable conclusion that barring gays and lesbians from serving openly provided for a more effective military. And she said that recent legal outcomes have raised the bar and demanded more evidence to justify anti-gay discrimination.
Good.
These are real interesting, all these different cases that are coming out in our favor. And again, our guest next week is Ken Upton, who's the local attorney for Lambda Legal, and he's going to be talking about a number of these cases with us. We are out of time. We're going out with music from
Adam Lambert.
And next week, like I said, Ken Upton, Patty should be back with us.
Perfectly. Yeah, they're mine.